Might be some people call in.
Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there. But can we still recall the time we cried? Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
I'd like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio. This is May the 27th, 2020. And tonight, my special guests are John and David Timmons. And our topic is The Mystique and the Legacy of the Doors, an anomaly of rock artists when they started in the summer of love of 1967 with the release of their first album, but yet not a part of the San Francisco scene or the growing folk rock scene in Los Angeles, or even part of the response to the British invasion. The Doors blazed their own path in the pantheon of rock. In only a four-year period from 67 to 71, they released six studio albums, a live album, and a compilation with a list of memorable songs. Through the years, the rock and roll establishment seemed uncomfortable with the Doors, their success, and their mournful yet beautiful music. They were often viewed as simply too heavy for the critics, who covertly resented them, that they could be simultaneously mysterious yet so wildly popular. Although snubbed in many ways for their place in the history of rock, the Doors were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1993, and yet probably they were the last ones to care about their snubs with their rivals and awards. Join the Timmons brothers, and we have them tonight, as they explore the most misunderstood rock band and analyze the legacy that Ray Manzarek, Robbie Krieger, John Densmore, and Jim Morrison left us today. Thank you guys for being on the show. This is a great topic. We've covered a lot of things in our past years that we've been doing this show. And if there's a band that stands out, John, you said they were an anomaly. That really is what they were, because you try to put them in a little box and it's hard to do because they were different. Their sound was different. The way they approached music was different. They were very technical and very classical. They were good musicians. They were great musicians. And yet their music was real and raw, and it had its own spirit, and you couldn't really – outside of the blues, I think, they and some of the old rock and roll, you really couldn't pinpoint where they were coming from, but you do see some of the blues, and Jim Morrison had a very soulful voice. Guys, welcome to the show. And
well,
how would you like
y'all.
To start? Yeah, how would you like to start this out? I know we've got some great music to play. We want to talk about why the Doors, John.
Well, John, thanks for having us back again. Appreciate it. And looking forward
My pleasure.
To talking about this topic. But the Doors, I think they were their own trailblazer. And as you were just stating, with them being an anomaly, the best example I can do to reflect that, I was watching a video when they made, I think, their only appearance on American Bandstand, and in between the two songs they did, Dick Clark is doing an interview, and he kind of talks to them about, you know, how would you categorize your music? Where do you guys fit? And it was the keyboards, right? Lee Ray Manzarek. He was saying that, you know, that's something for someone else to do from the outside. He said, we are on the inside. We are part of the music, and it has to come from the outside to give us a label, because we do not label our music. And I thought to myself, that was an interesting comment to make to Dick Clark, you know, right there. And they weren't even that well known yet, because they were riding the coattails of Light My Fire being their hit, and this was the summer of 67, you know. And I think that it's hard to say, oh, yeah, that's a peer of the Doors. They remind me of the Doors. A lot of people have tried to impersonate them and try to mimic them, but they are very much an original, right in the middle, right in the teeth of the British invasion, right in the middle of psychedelica, right in the middle of a blues sound. They did find their own path right there when it was very difficult, because they were competing with some of the best rock artists of the time when they hit it.
Hey, you
absolutely.
You got to say one thing about Jim Morrison. You talk about a great front man of a band. Mr. Morrison was that kind of a little bit different what he did, but they were a house band. John referred to 67. Well, early in 67, there was a show in L.A. called Chi Bang, and it was hosted by Casey Kasem on KTLA Channel 5. Casey had heard about this band playing at UCLA, USC, and all these college campuses, just playing at frat parties and stuff. And he said he wanted to bring them on there, and his own manager told Casey Kasem, he said, be careful what you ask for, because Jim Morrison, here's a different drummer, and if he gets on the show live. And that was the first time they would perform Light My Fire before they recorded it on his show, and everybody was just in awe. One of the guest bands on that show that night was the Jefferson Airplane, and they were all amazed of what this band sounded like. They'd heard of them, but that's the first time they had seen them. And they were very impressed. And I like what John said. You can't really characterize them. They just were did their own thing. And J.D., you mentioned the same thing. Very talented, but they were very raw. And that's why I think made them so interesting.
Yeah, I totally agree, guys. One interesting thing is there's a movie that's been out about a year. It's called Echo in the Canyon. I don't know if you guys have you seen that?
Is that the one of Johnny Depp?
No, I don't think Johnny Depp's in it, but
it was done by Jacob Dylan. He goes around and he does different kind of interviews.
That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah. Well, I bring that up because I knew some people that were in it, and I know a guy that was in the band, in the Echo in the Canyon band, and so, you know, I was kind of curious to see the movie. And one thing that's interesting, it's all about the Laurel Canyon, and it's all about, I mean, I would love to go back, guys, and be a fly on the wall during that period of the bohemian way that they lived back then, and all the different people that lived in the Laurel Canyon, and you talk about different. The interesting thing about that is they didn't mention the Doors once, and the Doors lived in Laurel Canyon. And their producer, gosh, what's that guy's name? I'll get it here in a second. Paul Rothschild. He was producing a lot of different bands. He hung out with Crosby and Stills and all those guys and Graham Nash, and I think he did some demo work with them. But I thought it was interesting because I did a review on this movie for the Madison County Spotlight, and why I'm saying all this is, who else would be an impressionable band than the Doors? But they were not mentioned in that because I don't know if they just didn't fit in, like you said, John, to the folk rock scene that was going on, or the, you know, there was all that happening. The Jefferson Airplane was up north in the San Francisco area, but with the Laurel Canyon, you had all this music going on. And I would say if you were going to list the groups that stirred things up, who would stir things up any more than the Doors did?
Jim Morrison had that natural talent of doing that. They did cross path with the Byrds. 1968, they's on tour together. Of all two groups to tour together, David Crosby tried to introduce himself to Jim Morrison. Too much alike, and it didn't click. And like I said, the Jim Morrison compared himself. If Edgar Allan Poe was a hippie, he would be Jim Morrison, and that's the way he said it. John, you mentioned this. I remember this film now, Jacob Dylan, because I think Roger McGuinn and a couple of the Byrds were in that. Chris Hillman, if I remember right. But to get back what you was all saying about the Doors, they were early in their career. The Whiskey A Go Go needed a band to play three solid nights. Well, the Doors had this Three Musketeer thing. They all volunteered to do it. That would be the first time Jim Morrison would get arrested for indecent exposure. And he, 22 times, and he always listened to the other side.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look back at that, because you really, what do you guys think about that? We're talking about the legacy. We're talking about the mystique of them. You can't leave that part out of the Jim Morrison's stage show and, you know, exposing himself and all the things that he did. And that's a part of it. We can't say we condone that, but you can't deny that, or you can't push it away. It's part of the history of the band. And there are some really good YouTube interviews out there with Ray Manzarek. I don't know if you guys have ever listened to any of those, but Ray's quite a talker when he was alive, and he talks about his relationship with Jim Morrison. And a friend of mine, when I worked at IBM, went to see Ray Manzarek before he passed away and got to talk to him and did a whole video of their conversation. Mm-hmm. And he was just so open with everything. He was holding nothing back. And I think that is so amazing that we can look back at that, and there are people that are still available to talk about it, although Jim's dead and Ray's dead. What you said, David, makes me think about that, because what do you think if, okay, so the Doors were incredible musicians, but they also drew in a crowd of people because the people were thinking, we don't know what they're going to do.
Hey, John, you brought up a good point. Their live concerts, and this was always what nobody knew what they were going to get. Jim might have decided to quote poetry. Krieger said one time he decided to read some of his poems, and they were playing Light My Fire, but he wanted to read some of his poetry. But I think, though, the band was so – I call it the Three Musketeer mentality. Even everybody thought they didn't get along. They got along. It just, and my brother John can bring up more than that, because they were basically, John, I'm almost pretty sure they had a pack for whatever they did, didn't they, John?
Oh, yeah, they did. I mean, it was true to everything, that it was agreement that if all four didn't go along with it, you dropped the idea. And the perfect example was the song Light My Fire, and Buick wanted to use it for a commercial. And they offered tons of money to the Doors, you know, turn into an advertisement. And all three of them, Manzarek and Densmore and Krieger, they were all, oh, yeah, yeah, Jim, you want to do it? He said, only if I can smash a Buick on stage with a sledgehammer. So he voted no.
Yeah, voted no. Yeah, he had, I think one thing also with Jim Morrison was, didn't he have a military background and his father was in the military?
Exactly. His father was an admiral in the military, and Jim, as a very young person, would go on the ships with him, and he respected the military, but, you know, I saw an interview with his father before he passed away, and he said that it was obvious that Jim respected the military, but it was also, you could tell, it wasn't cut out for him, you know. And,
and you guys can think about it, the Unknown Soldier, they wrote that song about the Vietnam conflict.
Yes. Yeah, it was one of those things where, it's a great, really great point because of his background. And we talk about the hippie culture and the counterculture. We talk about Laurel Canyon. We talk about all these people that were together with this new way of thinking, this bohemian way of looking at life. And when I think it was Stephen Stills they interviewed in Echo in the Canyon said, this was when lyrics meant something for the very first time, because you had rock and roll, but you know, me and my baby are going to dance all night and that kind of stuff. And now you've got, you know, Bob Dylan and all these guys and the Birds and people talking about poetic literature and things rhymed and made sense. And like you're talking about, David, like songs that represent things. And he was saying that's where poetry met music. And it changed, you know, the people stopped just listening to it, or they stopped just hearing the music and they started listening to it. And
there,
I think,
John,
yeah,
there was
I
a,
got, yeah,
did
go
you,
ahead.
Did you both, you guys ever see the PBS special on the Doors? And the reason why I brought up Johnny Depp, he was like the MC of it. He read the poetry of Jim Morrison and then they would do a song. And I remember, I don't know if they have showed that again. It was during one of them times he's trying to get money for the PBS. And it was very interesting. But I got to bring up this point. Ed Sullivan, and John, you remember hearing this too. Ed Sullivan said he would never have that band on his show again because Jim Morrison was being Jim Morrison. He looks right in the camera, and Ed and John, didn't they have them booked for 9 times, and he canceled all 9 times?
Yeah, they had him booked for many more occasions, and it was their first time, ended up being their only time on the Ed Sullivan Show. And of course, they really kind of dramatized it in the Doors movie when it was Val Kilmer playing Jim Morrison, which I thought he did a good job, by the way. But that was such an important scene to the movie, but also important to the career of the Doors, that they were rebellious in their own way and they were going to cut their own path. And the argument was, for people listening out there who might have seen this, want to call in about it, producers were trying to tell Doors, you know, if you could just change that lyric there in that song, You Light My Fire, instead of saying higher, how about better? I think that'd be much better. Do it that way. And Morrison just kind of nodded his head, and others kind of just looked at him. And they didn't know what to expect out of Jim. I don't think Jim knew what to expect out of himself. And right there on stage, not only did he say the word higher, he exaggerated it and looked right into the camera, just as plain as he can be. Now, at the time when people were watching it, I don't think they realized all the controversy. It didn't really come out till later, but I know it set off Ed Sullivan for sure.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because we started the show off today with a break on through to the other side, and that also was banned in a lot of places in England, and they made them take out the word high in it because he yells out, she gets high. And doesn't this sound weird that they would do that now? But back then it was like they felt that if the rock bands said things like getting high and she gets high and all that, that the kids would drop everything they're doing and go out and get high. And that, and a lot of them did, but I don't think it was just because of that. But I think it's pretty interesting how, you know, you brought that up, how in Light My Fire, he was just going to, that was just the way they were. It was like, give me an opportunity to speak my mind and to be who we are and we'll do it. We're not going to be the grassroots. We're not going to be any band that's just going to put on our little suits and play music and make money. In spite of all that, which I think is really interesting, in spite of their spirit, and Ray Manzarek is like super intelligent, and he's like breaking everything, all the philosophies down and stuff like that. And when, like you were saying, John, when he was talking to Dick Clark, I would imagine he would have talked for an hour if they would have let him. But through all of that, you know, they made a lot of money selling records. And it was like, do what you got to do. Make the little bands you want on your little pedestals. We're going to do what we do. And they were very comfortable. And I don't think they really wanted to be like super famous or super rich. They just wanted to play their music the way they wanted to play it, how they wanted to play it, with no censorship. And
Hey, John, I got to bring this up. Columbia Records was afraid to sign them. Columbia had first crack at them, but they were afraid of what they were going to get. And I think Elektra, they were a new label. Let's take a chance on them. But you wonder, John, J.D., if Columbia would have signed them, look what they would have had, but they were too afraid to do it.
Well, you know, I guess it's one of those things, David, where you can, hindsight is 2020. We can look back now and think that was not a good move by them. But they're probably seeing all these guys in their suits with their nice haircuts in their Buicks. There you go. And, yeah, and going home to their white picket fence houses, and they – I love it. The Doors are the opposite of that. The total opposite of everything those guys stood for. And that's where, you know, when people talk about the counterculture, that was it. It was like, yeah, go ahead. You know, do what you got to do, but we're going to make our music the way we're going to make it. And one of you guys said, like, Morrison would come in and out of the studio. He'd come in, he'd sing a little bit, he'd walk around. Then he'd leave, and they didn't know where he would go, and he'd come back. And it was like they if it would have been like, oh, hey, you got to do this, man. You got to come in the studio, and you got to obey the laws and the rules and sit down and do this. They would have lost him. He would have just walked out. He would have never come back.
In Kreischer's book, guys, I read his book, and JD brought up a good point. They's in the recording studio working on the second album. Well, Jim Morrison told him he had to sit down and chew on a bunch of bubble gum to relax his mind. And they said he kept blowing big bubbles. And they said, how long you want to do this, Jim? And he said, till I'm satisfied with my mind. They said it took 2 days to record 3 songs.
Yeah, he was out there, man. I'll tell you that. But is there anything you guys want to talk about the first song, Break On Through? Because that was – cool thing about that song is Light My Fire gets a lot of exposure, and it should, because it's a great song. It really is a great song. But Break On Through was track one on side one. So when people,
yep,
the first album, so when they heard The Doors, that was their first song. And my friends, they broke on through, didn't they?
Oh, they did. Oh, my God. Hey, John, here's my opinion on that. They wanted to show on that very first song, oh, we're not the Beatles. We're definitely not Chicago. We're The Doors. And when you hear about Break On the Other Side, they were playing for the other side. That's my opinion on it. I don't know what John thinks, but I'll let John talk.
You know, I didn't really discover the song. I mean, I knew about it, but ironically enough, till some 20-some years after it was made, when the movie came out in 1990-91. And, you know, it was a prominent song in the movie. And, in fact, you would have thought by watching the movie it was probably one of their biggest hits. I mean, because they really, really promoted it. And I think it would have been even bigger hit than it was if it had been released a little later. It was their first single. I think if they would have released it after Light My Fire, it probably would have made at least top 20, you know. The opening there, and I was reading this, and I got thinking, why is that opening sound so different? That doom, 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 doom. It's that bass guitar, but I like the bossa nova sound coming in on the back beat. That you almost associate more with the middle of the road, you know, type of club singer, you know.
They were definitely John Brazil 66.
I know it sounds really odd, but you do catch that bossa nova sound, you know, in terms of the rock sound. But that just showed the ability to extend as far as their type of their musicianship to the song. And also, I liked how Morrison really was clearly stating with proper diction. You didn't have to guess what he was saying. You know, some singers like mumble. And he didn't mumble.
I think we have a caller that has on speakerphone. Could you please get off speakerphone?
Hey there. Break on through to the other side, guys.
Who do we have on the call?
Yeah. Oh, I think John knows who it is. He invited me earlier in the week.
I think it's Eric.
I think
Hi,
you're right.
Hi, Eric. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Hey, Eric, do you have any Doors stories?
I lived a life for 2 years. What do you mean, do I have any Doors stories? That was my life, man. I read No One Here Gets Out Alive. You guys aware of that book?
Yes.
There's an autobiography called No One Here Gets Out Alive. I mistakenly, stupidly read that book back in, I think, 1981 and decided I was going to live like Jim Morrison for the next year and a half. And I did. He was a self-destructive kamikaze, and he dragged me and others along for the ride. That's what he was to me.
Now,
go ahead.
Yeah, so we were talking earlier, Eric. This is really interesting. Okay, so you got this guy, you got Jim Morrison, you got Densmore, you got all these guys that are incredible music.
Incredible, every one of them, and Jim Morrison, too. He was a great poet.
With the mystique of the band and what they did and the lifestyle they lived in, the way that they broke through all the barriers, there was not anything that they didn't, they tried everything, did everything. And that was what the band was about. What do you think they would have been, Eric, if they would have been like Freddie and the Dreamers or somebody like that? If they, you know what I mean? If they would have been,
I know what
they
you
wouldn't
mean.
Have had
it
that lifestyle.
It wouldn't have gone over very well. It wouldn't have been as popular, and they wouldn't have lasted as long. I mean, they would have lasted longer if Jim hadn't gone to Paris and died in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Eric, couldn't you see Jim Morrison do the Freddy though? I think he would have done it.
I can never unsee that, David.
Do you guys know a month before he died, he called John Densmore and said he wanted to come back and do a tour of that last album they did? What was it, Morrison Hotel?
Yes.
Yeah, that was their last album. And they had never performed any of that stuff live before, so he was going to come back, and they were going to go on a tour of that last album, which would have been incredible, because I think that's their best
Eric,
album.
They never did Riders of the Storm live.
No.
Only in the studio.
Exactly.
So it would have been new.
It would have been incredible.
Yeah.
L.A. Woman was on that album too, right?
Right.
I think
in fact, that was the album. It was the L.A. Woman album, I believe. That was their last studio album.
And everybody knows Mr. Mojo Rising is an anagram of Jim Morrison's name.
Very good. Absolutely.
Right. Well, Mr. Mojo Rising.
Yeah.
How'd you guys bring
Eric,
back
let me ask
memories?
You this question, Eric. I know you've seen a lot of concerts. If what would you got to do if you'd went to a Doors concert in your heyday? I think you would ate it up.
Would I have survived it is a better question.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, Eric, you know what I mean? You've
gracious.
Been friends for a long time. I can ask you that, but you know what I mean.
they did come to Cincinnati. I was too young. I think they were at the Gardens, John, weren't they?
Yeah. from what I read, John, were you able to see him live, John, when they were touring?
No, I was not.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Have any of you guys seen Moonlight Drive in their heyday when they imitated the Doors?
No, is that a cover band?
They were a cover band from Cleveland, would come down to Columbus's old Agora. And my brother John, if I'm right, John, they were there about every other month, weren't they?
They played often.
Yeah.
They were one of the first bands to what I would call a tribute band. You know, now it's so common,
okay.
But my gosh, they were doing it around 79, 1980, you know.
And the guy played Morrison, I think, thought he was Jim for a while.
Now, there was a band called the Backdoors that I saw here in Cincinnati. They were tremendous. Have you heard of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Backdoors was their name.
I haven't heard of them. What do you guys, let's take a little side trip. Let's a sidebar on this one. So, what do you think of cover bands? And what do they call them, tribute bands? What do you guys think?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I've seen.
I know they make money.
Eric, you've probably seen this tribute band. Have you ever seen 1964?
No, I heard of them. That's a Beatles tribute band.
Yeah, they do
band,
the
right?
Beatles. They just do the early stuff and everything. But there ain't no tribute band for Razor's Edge.
No,
you
got to
do that yourself,
that
buddy.
Sound.
No,
I know.
Nobody could do that.
I love it. That's great.
Go ahead, John.
Go. Okay. My thought of a tribute band, you really should only be doing it if the actual band's not performing live anymore or they have passed away, because I think it's kind of a ripoff if somebody is still active. But if it's somebody like playing the role of David Bowie and doing certain eras of Bowie, I'd be interested, because you cannot see Bowie perform live anymore. So that, I'm kind of, I like the idea of 1964, the early Beatles, because that's not going to happen. But when you try to do someone that, like, you know, a cover band of the Beach Boys, and there's different segments of it still touring, I would rather see the different segments of the Beach Boys than I would the Beach Boys as far as cover band.
I actually think the current Beach Boys are a tribute band to the real Beach Boys.
I agree, guys.
Yeah. I see your point.
Yeah. You know my biggest nightmare, guys? A tribute band for the Osmonds. That'd be scary.
Yeah. And the reason
there's a Pink Floyd cover band out there that is absolutely out of this world. They're
is
called
that
the Brit
Floyd.
Floyd?
They call them
Brit
Eric.
Floyd. They're absolutely amazing. I've seen them every time they come to town. I see them.
And they make a lot of money.
Yeah, they do. They charge probably more than the original band did back in the day.
Well, that's the thing. I've talked to musicians about this topic, and they all would love to play their own original music and be authentic, but they got to pay the bills and pay the rent, and that makes money, and that gets them out there, and they do that for that reason.
Exactly.
And I have the mixed feelings on it. It's like you're only going to be as good as somebody else. You do definitely have a ceiling, because you're doing somebody else's stuff, and I don't know. Would you rather be in a really – here's a question for you guys. Would you rather be in an incredibly successful, famous tribute band – or a struggling, original, authentic band?
The money, guys. I'd rather be in that band of a tribute band.
I'll play the same songs over and over again if I have to.
Because you're in there. I hate to say this, and Steve Miller said it says about the take the money and run. I would take the money and run, guys.
Okay. How about you, Eric?
Yeah, definitely go with the money. Go with the playing the songs that the people want to hear. They don't want to hear any original stuff by this band. They want to hear, you know, the favorite bands.
And now we have John Timmons.
Well, I think you only hit yourself against the arm of your guitar or the snare drum so many times, and you want to make your own original music. After a while, you got to give in and say, fellas, if we really want to make the big bucks and people tell us, oh, boy, I bet you guys would be a great tribute band of The Who, then I guess you compromise and go for the cash.
How do you feel, JD?
I'm the opposite of you guys. The Ruddles had that song, All You Need Is Cash. Do you guys know that song?
Good one.
Oh, I know. Seriously, I'm not making this up. I know a Ruddles tribute band in Texas, and I've tried to get them on this. Yeah, and I've tried to get them on this show, and it's been really hard to do. And they're still interested. I'm one of those guys that I have a hard time listening to tribute bands. It's just something with me, and I could go and listen to the music myself and hear it by the original artist, and it's like somebody that can sit down and play beautiful sheet music, but they don't have any originality or anything. So to me, I would rather hear a person that was bringing something new that had never been done before that was original than hear something that it's like that's me. And I talk to these guys that have bar bands and stuff, and they come in and play some of their original stuff, and people are throwing things at them, and they want to hear, you know, Summer of 69 and all this stuff, and they play it and people go crazy and they're dancing. So it's like, you know, do you want to be popular and get gigs, or do you want to sit by yourself in the back of a bar with no one there playing your own music? It's a good question, but
JD, let me ask you this. I know you're a big fan of Uriah Heep. Let's say they offer you to join this tribute band for Uriah Heep. We need a bass player. And let's say you're with a band that's struggling. Would you really consider it at the time?
Right now or back when I was younger?
Yeah,
I probably would consider it. I do agree with that. It's just now where I'm at now. I'm like thinking about it, so it's very possible. But I think, it's one of those things where you're just as good as the people you're imitating. That's as good as you can get. And it's hard to do. I mean, you can't sound like the Beatles unless you're really good. You can't sound like Pink Floyd, like Eric said, unless you're really good. So you got to be really, really
talented.
Pink Floyd
is really good. I highly recommend to see them. Of course, none of us are going to concerts for a while.
Not for a little bit. Well,
it'll be 2021, I bet, before.
Yeah, it probably will. I would agree with that. My guests tonight are John and David Timmons, and you can go on their website, timmonsrock.com, and we're talking about the mystique and the legacy of the Doors. And, man, we got a lot to talk about. We heard Break On Through, which that just such an incredible song. We talked a little bit about that. Now let's have another music break. Let's play Love Me Two Times. Now that's off of their Strange Date album, and I believe that was also in 1967, somewhere in there. And
written by Robbie Krieger.
Yeah, what do you think, Eric, of his guitar style?
I love it.
It's different.
I just looked at an interview with him online today. I didn't realize he didn't use a pick back then, and that was very rare. Because almost all guitar players used picks back in those days.
Yeah.
And he
especially electric guitar players.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I saw him
do
Love Two Times on a video today, and he finger-picked it. It was great. He's still alive.
Yeah, and he's so different. I mean, when I listen to him play, it doesn't sound like anybody else. It sounds – it's kind of jazzy and bluesy.
Exactly.
And it's just really out there, and it fits perfectly with what they do. So, John or David, you got anything you'd like to say about Love Me Two Times? I mean, that's back on the Strange Days album, and we're going to play that. So if you got anything you'd like to say about it?
I'll go first. Back to the appearance on the Dick Clark American Bandstand, he asked him, "So what's in your future, fellas?" And Jim Morrison said, "We're working on a new album, and it'll be our second album." He goes, "What are you going to call it?" He goes, "I don't know. I think we'll call it Strange Days." And that's what he said, like, Strange Days. And by gosh, that's what they actually called it. This was several months before it was even going to be released. Love Me Two Times, if you haven't heard before, listeners, listen to Ray Manzarek on the keyboard with the kind of the staccato sound you associate more with classical music. Blends it in really well. That's something that stands out for me for this song.
And they debuted this song at the Whiskey A Go Go too, before it was even recorded. That's all I want to say. And a very good song, like John says, the keyboard work is excellent.
Okay, this is The Doors, Love Me Two Times. We'll be right back after this. You're back on John Talk Radio. We have John and David Timmons with us, and we're talking about The Doors, the mystique, and the legacy of The Doors. We just heard Love Me Two Times. I have a stump the Timmons brothers. You guys ready for this?
I think
we're
so.
Ready. I think so.
You ready? You ready?
I think. Okay. I think we're about 50-50 on these.
Yeah, about, yeah. Or batting well, average.
Now, when I listen to any music, the first thing I hear is the bass. And I play the bass. I love the bass. It's just in me. I hear it. It goes through my body. It's just a part of me. The Doors were unique because out of the four members, they didn't have a bass player. When they recorded Light My Fire in the studio, who played the bass on Light My Fire by The Doors in the studio?
Right. I think that I'm going to go down the trick question route. Sometimes this works, sometimes it doesn't. But I know they didn't have a bassist. But I've also seen an interview with Ray Manzarek where they would try to audition different bass players. Like, nah, that's not what we're looking for. And sometimes he would get a similar sound through his keyboard or his other effects. So I'm going to go as a trick question and say it was Ray Manzarek that was mimicking the sound of bass to get the sound because of his ability to do on a keyboard. I know I'm really stretching out there, but I'm basing it on that interview.
Okay, David?
I am going with Ray Manzarek, too, because he had this way of making the keyboard sound like a bass, and the Doors were never satisfied. I know they brought in several bass players that they just weren't satisfied with, but I'm like my brother. I'm going to take a chance and go with Ray Manzarek.
Okay. Now, are you guys impressed with my special effects tonight? I got a great one.
Yes. Got
a Jeopardy music going.
Yes.
Okay, so the reason I know this is because I'm a big fan of the Wrecking Crew, and Larry Knechtel was the bass player in the Wrecking Crew, and he was actually a member of the band Bread. And
Bread.
I'm a
Bread fan. As soon as you said Larry Knechtel, I knew of Bread. Yeah.
He did set in then, did he, JD? I didn't know that.
He was a studio musician for for Light My Fire on the album, and they had a couple of guys that they really liked that toured with them that played bass. I think Jerry Sheff did some, but Larry Knechtel was the guy, and he was man. You listen, he can play, and those guys.
Oh, yeah?
We talked about the guys in the suits going home to their little places. That was those guys. That was
the Wrecking Crew was well known. The Wrecking Crew is who what made the Beach Boys, basically. So I can see them doing this. Couldn't you see Jim Morrison though working with a bunch of people with flat tops and stuff? I just don't think anyone's want to laugh.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah,
good question though, John. Interesting. Good.
Yeah,
About that musician, Larry Knechtel, he would bring kind of a, I know it sounds like an oxymoron, but he'd bring a rock sound to some of the Bread songs, too. You know, I mean, like the song which is Mother Freedom, you know, and I mean, when you hear that, you wouldn't think it's Bread. You would think you're listening to a rock and roll group. So anybody out there listening, check out Bread, Mother Freedom. You'll be surprised. It's not mellow 70s rock.
You know what? You know what I always said about Bread, John? Put them in the toaster. They're never going to pop.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's impressive, David. We have another caller.
He's had a lot of practice giving those insults because he knows I follow him.
Oh, okay. Very, very good band. I mean, my goodness. I don't know where you would classify them, soft rock or yacht rock or whatever. But
Right. Yeah,
we have a couple of callers calling in, so let's take them. Okay, caller area code 419, do you have a question or comment for the Timmons brothers?
Yeah, this is Mike, and I'm calling just to make a comment here.
Hey, Mike.
I know a lot of people have other different favorites. I'm going to say that my favorite is Strange Days, that album, because the opening song Strange Days, and then when the music is over, I think that the harpsichord, the what Ray does on that, all this, the keyboard, I think it's fantastic.
Besides,
I just love the album. I just love the album cover with the street performers, for one thing. I think that's fantastic. But the music there, plus I think the album itself seems more like just one flow, like an album. It's like it's telling one story. So I know, I like their albums that they have too, but Strange Days is my favorite. So I just want to throw that comment in.
Hey, Mark,
hey, Mike.
I'd like to bring it. How you doing, Mike? Hey, Mike, I want to bring this up to you.
Good.
If you would have had a chance to see the Doors live, would you went?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it.
I'd be the same way. Yes, yes.
I would have taken you along with me.
Yeah, that would be good. And go back in the time machine. Mike, do you have any other music on vinyl?
Oh, gosh. My song, my vinyl, I gave them to my son. He has them.
So you know where they are.
So,
that's a good thing.
That's right, yeah. But anyway, that's my comment. I have the album, but Strange Days is my favorite, though.
So. Oh, and, cool. That's
well,
great.
Now I have it on Spotify. I've got it, so.
You know, Mike, I gotta mention this to you. One thing we gotta do in the near future: what group belongs in the Hall of Fame?
That's right, you got it.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I'm thinking about?
Oh yeah, Paul and the Raiders. I know.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say the monkeys, David.
Pastor Mike, summer of 1967, a good time for music for you and I, because here you telling about how you like Strange Days, and that's about, you know, came out maybe a little later in 67, but maybe about 9 months earlier, Spirit of 67, Paul Venerator is an Undecided
that,
Man.
That album, yeah, that album, Spirit of 67, that's right. No, that's another great song.
And it's an overlooked song.
That's right. I think that's the best song on that album.
Yeah. Very complex. And I bring it up because I see similarities in that song the Raiders did with Undecided Man. Hmm. Had a different kind of vocal, but I could have seen Jim Morrison doing a song like that too. You know, he would have given a different twist to it, but the lyrics are more like a Doors poetry type song.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's more like the poetry. You don't see that a lot of your songs, but that one was poetic in that sense. Like Edgar Allan Poe.
You brought up Edgar Allan Poe. You know, Morrison said that him and Edgar Allan Poe, you know how he was into the Call at times? He said if Edgar Allan Poe, he would have been a member of the Doors and be one of his hippie guys.
Oh, would have been great.
No. Okay. Anything else, Mike? I got another caller here. Let's bring another one on here.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Mike. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Let's see. Area code 513, do you have a question or a comment for the Timmons brothers?
Am I on?
You are.
Okay. To David and John, I'm known as Cousin Bob.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Bob.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Good hearing you, Bob.
This is the first time I've listened to this live in a few years. But I wanted to share a few things. You know my trivia. Is that Larry Nechtel is more famously known as the piano player who played the piano on Bridge Over Troubled Water.
That's right.
Oh.
What a talented guy.
And he toured with Simon and Garfunkel in 1969.
Uh-huh. Very good.
Good tidbit.
Incredibly talented guy.
About 3 years ago, I bought a CD I saw in Kroger, and it was a live recording of one of the 69 concerts. I never seen it anywhere else, but it's got him playing the piano. He toured with them, and it was interesting that he went along with them at the same time. But in terms of the Doors, I also wondered about the bass player because I've listened to them for years and knew that they didn't have anyone. I kind of thought Robbie Krieger kind of overdubbed, but I guess they didn't work that way.
Well, Bob, you brought up a good point. Think of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Craig Lake actually went to bass guitar, and he did overdub with ELP. So I bet anything, but some of the Doors did at times, too.
Also, I had heard, heard or read, that Riders on the Storm was the last song that Jim Morrison recorded.
Yeah, that's true. He never even got to do it live, even. That's true.
And Bob, I don't know if you were listening, but Eric was calling in earlier, and he made a good comment.
Hey there.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Eric. But you were talking about Riders on the Storm,
Riders on the Storm was the last song. Bob is correct. That was the last song he performed.
Okay.
And then the very next day, he went to Paris.
Yeah. And then you were talking about that conversation he had, who was it, with John Densmore, telling how he was excited when he was in Paris. He was still on the phone.
He wanted to come back.
I'm looking forward to getting back, and I want to tour with these songs.
Yeah, that was a video I saw today about Ray Manzarek did.
I saw that, too. That's a great, great interview. I mean, I learned a
lot.
That's
the one I watched.
Yeah, that's a really good one. But I want to say, Cousin Bob, that you just stumped the Timmons Brothers number two, so you won that one.
What was that?
I was going to ask him what the last song that Jim Morrison sang.
Oh, okay.
And
H.J.D. got trapped that time.
Yeah, so cousin Bob wins.
They can get.
We don't have
good one,
Bob.
Good one, really good one.
But Jim,
they were in Oxford. By the way, guys, they were in Oxford that year in 1969. Not the Doors, but Simon and Garfunkel.
Exactly,
yeah, that'd be cool.
And I think one of our friends, Stu, was at that concert. I believe. I think he told me this.
It was the first concert ever in
the newly opened Millett Hall.
I think it was Dick Vining, the one I know was there. I don't know. Maybe Stu
was
there too.
Okay.
Now, did Paul Simon, hey, Eric, did Paul Simon smash his guitar off the stage like Peter Towns, or he quit doing that, didn't he, at that point?
I don't know. Not sure about that.
Okay.
Maybe that was David Gates of Bread that did that.
That's right. Keep pouring
on
Bread.
Get a couple jabs
here,
in
okay.
here. Yeah. Let's play another song by the Doors. We want to get in some of this great music. So our next song is Hello, I Love You, and Waiting for the Sun album, 1968. What do you guys think about that?
I think the Doors were looking for a hit, and to prove that they could do that sound, that not every song has to be 10 or 11 minutes long, and it can be catchy. And John, I think you know more about the producer than I did, but I believe this might have been the song. One song he walked out on him and claimed he didn't like the direction it was going. Now that might not have been it because he thought it was, but this was more of a commercial song meant to be commercial.
This one was to make money and sell records, definitely.
And it worked.
Yes, it did.
This is The Doors. Hello, I Love You. We'll be right back.
Hello, I love you. Won't you tell me your name? Hello, I love you. Let me jump in your game. Hello, I love you. Won't you tell me your name? Hello, I love you. Let me jump in your game. She's walking down the street, blind to every eye she meets. Do you think you'll be the guy to make the queen of the angels sigh? Hello, I love you. Won't you tell me your name? Hello, I love you. Let me jump in your game. Hello, I love you. Won't I love you, let me jump in your game. She holds her head so high, like a statue in the sky. Her arms are wicked and her legs are long. When she moves, my brain screams out this song.
And you're back on John Talk Radio. I'm your host, John Darlington. We have John and David Timmons with us tonight. We're talking about the Doors, and we're talking about the mystique and the legacy of the Doors. And we just heard Hello, I Love You. I have another incredible, mind-bending Stump the Timmons Brothers. And are you guys ready for this? Is the last one, so all the pressure
we'll
will
give
be
it
gone.
A track.
Okay, so we talked about Paul Rothchild, and he was their producer, and he produced some stuff early, and he was known for his work with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and he actually was one of the guys that lived in the Laurel Canyon in California and was in the bohemian lifestyle, knew all these different guys and all the musicians and stuff. And he actually, I think it sort of might have happened, and it might be a rumor, but that when they did the original demo for Crosby, Stills, and Nash, that this certain person, that fill in the blank, sang on the first demo. And this person, and he is somebody that was active in the Laurel Canyon region, this person played harmonica on Deja Vu, the song Deja Vu from the album. Who is this person?
I'm going to go with
Neil
Young.
He became famous in his own. Go ahead, Dave.
I'm going to go with Neil Young.
Okay. John?
Did this person become famous for something else?
Yes.
Okay, so it wasn't just like this is like it was. This wasn't their only claim to fame that they played harmonica and they were with that canyon.
Very
all
famous.
Right. Well, all right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and You guys were talking about the Monkees earlier. Imagine them should be in the Hall of Fame. You're joking. I know you said that. Although I know Marcy wants them in the Hall of Fame.
they might as well be.
I tell you what, this doesn't have any logic. But I know Stephen Stills tried out for the Monkees, and so did John Sebastian. Neither one got it. So let's say John Sebastian.
You're right.
I
absolutely right.
Oh, I blew it, guys. I thought it was
man. You were.
You
took us all the way
Young.
Around Robin Hood's barn, John. But you got it. That was really good. And
hey, John, you got to eat with me for my bread comment now.
Yeah, you guys could get along like brothers. So that was a good one. Very good job, Mr. Timmons.
Good question,
excellent
job. John, too. Great question.
Yeah, I love coming
wow.
up with my Stump the Timmons Brothers questions.
We
it's a lot
talked
of fun.
About the Love and Spoonful in class, my 60s class this past semester. And there was an awkward moment in the class when they asked me, you know, what is that group's name for? I was like, I really don't want to go into it here. Just look it up on your own.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing for it, too.
And I left it at that and moved on.
Yeah.
That's a good teacher. We do have another caller, area code 864. Do you have a question for the Timmons Brothers? Okay. 864-219.
Caller, are you there?
74. Hold on. I got to get them off mute. Okay. The caller 864-219-1174. Do you have a question for the Timmons Brothers? Okay. We will
must be Jim Morrison coming trying to come back from the grave.
What do you think, David? He's breaking on through from the other side?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I gotta bring this up, John. On Halloween, they may not quit doing this now, maybe faithful friends of Jim Morrison outside of Paris, France, sit around his grave claiming they hear Doors songs. Maybe this is around Morrison too long. But they claim that on Halloween. I've heard this. So we'll see.
I wouldn't doubt it. Would you like to go there if you had the opportunity? Would you go to his gravesite?
I would like to see it. I really would. You know, it'd be interesting. But then again, you know, but they don't know where exactly buried. My brother John, did you bring this up to me? They don't know exactly where in France it is. They keep it covered up.
Well, I think some people know, obviously, because they raid and so on, but a gentleman that I know, his daughter was living in Paris there for a while, and they tried to finance a larger cemetery, and they were looking all over, and they couldn't locate it. That's not saying it wasn't there, but he was saying that it was such a mystery, like, why can't we find this, you know?
And you know,
he
died in a bathtub. That's the story I read in a book. But I don't know. That's what they said. But they said they don't have a Zach Marker because they're afraid of something happening. And so it must be some fact to it then. So.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've seen pictures that it looks like his grave, but you never know, man. It could be a conspiracy because in the if Eric's still on, the video I was listening to with Ray Manzarek today, he said that no one ever saw his body.
You don't think he's like Elvis and working at some gas station or something, then?
Well,
I don't know.
It's
maybe.
Interesting because, you know, we were talking about Jim Morrison being a different person. I saw an interview several years ago with his younger sister, and she was saying that Jim was a different person even in high school. He found it boring, and sometimes he would walk out. One day he walked out and told the teacher, I've had enough. I need to go out and get a brain tumor removed, and just kept on walking. And I bring that up because when she said they didn't find out the family until several days after he supposedly had been buried, that he had died, and then rumors started spreading that, you know, he's just doing this and because he got tired of the publicity and just wanted to have privacy. She said, you know, my brother, the more I thought about it, he's the kind of guy who would have done something like that. And she said, for the longest time, I was always still wondering, like, I wonder if he's out there somewhere. I mean, and that was from his sister.
Hey, John, well, he did a show, you guys, and he was supposed to be in London, England. The Jefferson Airplane was the warm-up act, and this is maybe middle of 1968. Well, he is drunk and comes out with the Jefferson Airplane and wants to sing with them. Then he passes out. And so the other three members of the Doors had to continue the show without Jim Morrison because he was laying backstage trying to wake up. I read that in my Doors book. And like I said, you talk about a front man. I tell you, he was his own man. I got to say that for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Dave, add to the story, it wasn't like they said, hey, let's bring Jim out on stage with the Jefferson Airplane. He came out uninvited and intoxicated. He didn't know what he was doing.
Grace Slick fell down. He bumps into Grace Slick, and she falls down. And he was wanting to dance and everything, and they didn't want him out there. So.
Yeah. Well, guys, let's play. We got a couple of songs we need to get to because I think the music is so important. Let's play People Are Strange and Touch Me, and then we'll come back and finish up the interview with John and David Timmons. And here we go. Anything to say about these songs, guys?
Go ahead, John.
People Are Strange. It was a song that I've read that Jim Morrison was in a state of mind. He was rather depressed, and at the time he was dropping acid, and they kind of talked him out of it, and they got him back into an okay condition. And I believe that same night, they went and started in the studio recording People Are Strange. So that was the kind of day he had leading into that song. And I think it's important to know that because it is a rather moody song that is kind of takes you down a black psychedelic mood of the time of 1967.
Yeah,
John, in my collection, of course, John knows I got this, JD. I got a Lou Reed version of People Are Strange, and he does complimentary what Jim Morrison did to it when Lou Reed was with the Velvet Underground. It's really a good, great one. And when you hear about, he does justice to the song too. It's one of my favorite Door songs.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then we're going to play Touch Me, which you talked about commercial success with some of, I think it was the Love Me Two Times. Touch Me is a commercial song. It even has a horn section in it, which is really cool. And I think it's a great song, but it is more of a commercial song. What do you guys think of that?
There used to be a pro wrestler come out to this song, Touch Me. when I used to watch wrestling very close. And to me, it was made again. This is my, well, I don't know what John thinks. It was made to sell records. They needed to make money.
Strangely enough, we're talking about just people are strange. My favorite Doors song is "Touch Me." I really like it.
I love
the strings. I love the brass. I just think it is a really you wouldn't think it's the Doors. It's got a really good fun way to, as far as melodic at times.
Yeah, I agree. I love this song.
And I mean, to me, it showed a lot of versatility to do a song like that. And it was the first 45 that I owned, so I played it a lot.
Oh, cool. That's good. Mine was Alvin and the Chipmunks, so you got me on that one.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Let me clarify. My first Doors 45. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
I was going to say the Doors are a little bit cooler than Alvin and the Chipmunks.
My first 45 guys was Captain Kangaroo's Treasure House Keys.
Ooh, that's a good one. We'll be right
that's
back after this.
That I needed to clarify that.
We'll be right back after this.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down. Can't you see that I am not afraid?
What was that promise that you made? Why won't you tell me what she said? What was that promise that you made? I'm gonna love you till the heavens stop the rain. I'm gonna love you till the stars fall from the sky for you and I. I'm gonna love you till the stars fall from the sky for you and I.
And you're back on John Talk Radio. I'm your host, John Darlington. We're here with John and David Timmons, the Timmons Brothers. You can go to their website, timmonsrock.com. And they've been with this show for a long time. We really appreciate you guys being on tonight. It's a great topic, talking about the Doors. Man, that song touched me. That might be the best vocals of Jim Morrison. It's just so clear and so incredible.
You know, John, it sounds, that is what, to me, that's probably his best song. His voice, like you said, when he catches those notes, he it's just a perfect job on that song and everything. I to me, you just want to hum along with it. And then the sax player on that sounds as good as Bobby Keys is on the sax. It was a great
I'm not
job
sure who that him. Is. Yeah.
Great job, though. Whoever this is, he's good as him.
We'll have to look that up, and that might be on the Stump the Timmons Brothers one of these days.
Hey, maybe it could be David Bowie.
Yeah, that's
you know, John, along with the ending there, the great sax work, how we'd be remiss if we did not spend Stronger Than Dirt. I mean, I always love that ending because that commercial was so popular at the time. Ajax laundry detergent is always Stronger Than Dirt. And I thought,
yeah,
you know, they had to have fun when they were in the studio. Like, how are we going to wrap this up? We're going to have this real crescendo. We're going to have this sax. How can we wrap it up? You know, and they're probably all laughing like, yeah, why don't we use that from they say in the commercial, Stronger Than Dirt. I mean, it was just a great way to wrap up the song.
Hey,
yeah,
guys,
I wonder if they ever wanted to sue him for that.
Hey, guy, here, guys, here's your Mott the Hoople a moment. Mott the Hoople made a song honoring Jim Morrison called Lounge Lizard, and it, you had to get the – and John knows I owned a rarity. Smerge, I let you hear it once, John.
Yep.
And I said, who are they honoring? And I said, it's the Lounge Lizard. And I had to get that in, guys.
Well, that's
and you
that's
did it
cool.
Quite well.
I did. Yeah, I didn't know that, so that's really good. You could have stumped me on that one, David.
Yeah, it's called Lounge Lizard, and it's on their rarities, which I got as an import, and it's only 2 minutes, but it's really, really great.
Well, it's awesome. So what do you guys think? I mean, we've talked about their songs, their music. John Timmons, is there anything we haven't reached a topic or we haven't talked about that you would like to bring up?
I bring up the topic that it was an era when there was an opportunity to appear on a lot of TV shows. Rock and roll artists was commonly on TV primetime shows, a lot of the variety shows. And the Doors were one of the few that were kind of the contrarians, did not want all the TV appearances. And one of the few rare times they were on primetime TV when they agreed to was on the Smother Brothers, because they liked their style that was sort of rebellious. It was anti-war. They were clever and witty. And supposedly Tommy Smother and Jim Morrison really had it, hit it off. And that was one of the few primetime shows that they actually performed, because TV just wasn't their kind of thing. And as a matter of fact, one of the best-known videos of the Doors was taken from the Smother Brothers, where you have they brought in the brass and the strings. They're wearing tuxedos, and they're performing this song right there, Touch Me. And if you ever see it, it's on YouTube. Some people thought he did it intentionally. Other people thought, well, maybe it was just a mistake. But the second time where to get ready to go, come on, come on, come on, he didn't do it. He's playing his a maraca and a microphone, doing them both, and not paying attention. And it kind of is a silence. You hear all the music, then he goes right in past come on, come on. And some people liked it that way. Said that was his way of spicing it up a little bit, so it wouldn't be exactly like. So you would know he was singing live, that you weren't listening to a recording.
Mm.
Yeah, when you brought this up about when the recording had touched me, he did what they called, to get that vocal, that sound, what they call a triple overdub, which was ahead of its time. And the producer at that time, they did this. And if you guys listen to it, them vocals, that's what they call it. The only other person I know that had done that at that time was probably John Lennon on Sgt. Pepper. But to do what they call a triple overdub, and which is really something for the, now it's common, but back then that was a achievement to do.
So what song was that he did the triple overdub on?
He did it on Touch Me on the End and on Hello, I Love You, where he does that real long hello. That's a triple overdub where he goes for a long time. They caught him doing the high part of it and then the middle part of it, and they triple overdubbed that. And you listen to it, J.D., you'll catch this. And he would do this in the studio occasionally, and I can't remember who the young engineer was with them at that time, but he would get famous later on. I'm having one of them moments, but if it hits me off, I'll say it. But there was some young engineer that helped him with that on that album.
Well, I did look up who played the sax on Touch Me. And it's somebody I've never heard of before. His name is Curtis Amy, and he was a jazz saxophone player.
Well, he was good.
Yeah. He's very good. So we've talked about their music. We've talked about their legacy. What's going on now? What are they doing now? What's Robbie Krieger and John Densmore doing? Are they currently making music? I really don't know. I think Krieger's made some recordings lately, but I can't remember too much about it.
Densmore's writing another book. I have heard this, and also he has a bunch of over in Europe. Don't quote me on this, but I'm very sure that he's got into this new style of computer music, whatever they call this, and he's I believe it's in Germany. You might check on YouTube. I think there's something going on in Germany with him, but I'm not for sure about the whole details, guys, on that.
You know, I kind of learned more about the Doors, what I call post-Jim Morrison Doors, more in recent years. I really did not know until I did research on them. They actually made a couple albums without Jim Morrison. I mean, it's like talk about albums that are not talked about or forgotten. I mean, very seldom do people refer, oh, yeah, those songs and those two albums they made after Jim Morrison died.
I got a trivia question for both of you guys. What lead singer did they try to recruit from Europe, England, to join the Doors after Jim Morrison died? And he's a very famous lead singer, guys. And they couldn't find him because he was on a vacation.
Paul Rodgers?
Great. JD got it. Yeah, yes, that's who it was, Paul Rodgers. They wanted Paul Rodgers as their lead singer. And it's amazing. Good job.
Yeah, I kind of remember that. I think that would be another thing. I talked about how I have a kind of a bad taste in my mouth about tribute bands. I would have the same bad taste in my mouth for somebody taking Jim Morrison's place. I mean, it's kind of like Adam Lambert singing in place of Freddie Mercury. It's like,
I agree with you. I
don't even try, dude. You're good on your own, but you know, people are going to compare you with him, and nobody can do what he did. And yeah, it's just kind of a thing with me. It's like, I'd rather just do your own thing. You know, he did his thing.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
cool.
Thing I want to bring up too, guys, the late Brian Howe was able to do that with Bad Company and have hits. It don't happen too often. And when you bring in a different lead singer, but it's hard to believe he's passed away, but Brian Howe was able to do that when Paul Rogers left Bad Company. So,
yeah, that's true. I mean, it does happen, and it can be, lucrative, David. I understand. It's just, to me, it's like, can't you do your own thing? Why do you have to tour trying to be Freddie Mercury or, you know, Jim Morrison? I just don't get that. And I know it would be hard. Like you said, if somebody asked me to be in a very, you know, popular tribute band, it would be hard. And they say, hey, you're going to make $10,000 a week. It'd be kind of hard to say no to that. And I get it. But I still think that, I don't know, maybe see what you can do on your own. But that's just me. That's old man me. So, guys, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. This took a long time to get to because of the COVID-19 and all the things that were going on and all the things, but I really feel great having you guys on the show. Thank you so much for being on. It's just not the same without you guys.
Hey, John, let me tell you truthfully, I always look forward to this. It's so fun with all three of us, and this makes my time, and not only is it educational, it's a lot of fun to be with you other two guys, and it has fun.
Yeah, it's a blast, and John, what's your final words here tonight?
Final words here tonight is, first of all, I want to say to anybody that's looking forward to a Timmons Brothers trivia show or presentation, we've had to postpone some of our shows for obvious reasons with this going on. But once things get back to a sense of normalcy, we'll be back. So, and watch our website. Thank you, John, for promoting it, timmonsrock.com, once we know more. And my final thoughts in regards to the Doors is that I did not realize they had music even after Jim Morrison, because when I think of the Doors, I really think of 1967 to 71. And I think if I can sum it up just in a few words, his dad wanted to do something to honor Jim, and he talked to different people, what can we put on his burial stone, if you can find it in Paris? And I guess it's written in Greek, true to his own destiny, true to his own spirit. And I think that speaks not only to Jim Morrison, but the band in general of the Doors. And they set their own path, and they were very true to it.
I would have to agree with everything you guys have said. It's just makes me, you know, believe in art and music and originality and not being afraid to be who you are and to make the music that you're making and think it might be popular and it might not. It doesn't matter. I'm going to make it anyway. And that's exactly what the Doors did. And they did it their way, like Frank Sinatra. And I think Jim Morrison was a big fan of Frank Sinatra. So we segued into that.
He was. He really was.
Yeah.
I just don't see him wearing a little hat and singing, though, guys. But okay.
Yeah, that would be weird.
Okay.
But well, thanks, guys. And I want to thank everybody that supported John Tuck Radio since November of 2008. We're moving right along, and we're getting ready. We're not too far from our 1,000th episode, so I'll let you guys know when that is. It's coming around.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's been a while, but thank you. Thanks, guys. God bless everybody, and take care and love each other, and we'll talk to everybody later. Good night.
Thanks, John.
Good evening.
Don't you love